You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso.
I'm Norma Martinez in for Louis Science today, and joined in the studio by the UTEP Dinner Theater's director, Greg Taylor, and the program coordinator for the UTEP Dinner Theater, Beverly Kerbs Ward. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Greg, you were very instrumental in establishing the Dinner Theater. You've been with us from the very start. And so maybe people who aren't familiar with the story of how the UTEP Dinner Theater came about, maybe sort of give us a colorful picture of you as a student starting off.
I don't know how colorful, but in 1983, I was a student here at UTEP, and I was a theater major, and I wanted to direct a musical, and I approached the theater faculty here, and they turned me down. And so a friend of mine, Jimmy Legaretta, and I decided to go to the student programs office and ask for money to put on our own show. And we were going to – originally the plan was to do it at the theater department. When they turned us down, we were having lunch one day in the Tomas Rivera Conference Center for some event. And I said, you know what? Screw them. Let's do it over here, and we'll do it as a dinner theater here in this room. And so we decided to do that. But then in the old days, you used to get your financial aid checks handed out to you in person. And they were giving them out that year, and I was on financial aid in the Union Ballroom. And I went in there and said, oh, this is a much better room. I'd never seen it before. And so we did our first production of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat in the ballroom as a dinner theater. And that's what started it all.
You already had the dinner theater thing in mind. It wasn't just – we're going to present a musical. We're going to present it as a dinner.
Well, originally it was just a musical. But like I said, when the theater department turned us down and we were eating lunch in that big empty room, I said, well, you know, we should just do it as a dinner theater.
And did you have the university cater?
Yeah. It's always been catered by the University of Food Services, which is now a Sodexo. But whoever's been running the food service at UTEP has always catered it.
I've played with the Dinner Theater before as part of the band directed by Pat Provencio, who's been with you for many years. I'm not sure if she's been with you from the start.
No, not from the start. 22 years, 23 years, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you've had some really terrific shows in recent years. You know, you've put on Cats, you brought Spamalot, you did Damn Yankees, and so many others that I can't even imagine. But what are some of the ones that you find that audience seem to mostly respond to?
Well, it's really – there's not a certain genre, because, I mean, we have very successful shows when we do the classics like Guys and Dolls or Damn Yankees or My Fair Lady or something like that. But then we also get big responses to other shows that, you know – of course, you would call them modern classics, I guess, like Cats and Beauty and the Beast. Cats and Beauty and the Beast are our two most successful shows that we've done. Probably going to be eclipsed by Les Mis this year, but those have been the most successful just because in the last 30 years since we've started, big name Broadway shows. I teach a class on Broadway musicals, and with social media, with YouTube and things like that, all these big name shows, even if people never get to New York or whatever, they hear of them and they see clips from them. So like shows like Les Mis and Cats and Book of Mormon and all these things get all this, I don't want to say publicity, but are brought to the forefront around the country that more people have heard of them. So when a tour comes here or then we end up doing the show, it's kind of pre-sold on the fact that, oh, I want to see that show. I heard all about it, blah, blah, blah. A lot of the audience today, our younger audience, doesn't know that much about Guys and Dolls and things of that nature. They're more into – I mean, we get questions almost every other day. When are you going to do Mamma Mia? You know, and believe me, I love Mamma Mia, and we'll do it the second it's released. But people don't understand that you have to get the rights from the people that own them, and they have not released them yet. All these modern shows that have been big hits, I mean, we get questions already on Book of Mormon. It'll be 20 years before that's available because it's selling out on Broadway and on tour. It's going to be a movie and – you know,
it's going to be several years.
It is several years. And if we ever do Book of Mormon, it's going to be one of those ones that we – what was it, 29 years ago, whatever, we did Hair the first time. We got so many complaints and stuff to the president about what a filthy show and blah, blah, blah. But then we did it again 5 years ago. Not a word. I mean, times have changed. And Book of Mormon – it's one of the dirtiest shows you've ever seen. It's filthy, but it's hysterical.
And as long as you let the audience know.
Oh, yeah. No, we always – if you ever look at our brochures, if there's a show that has questionable subject matter, language, things like that, we always put it in there saying this has language. And there, I haven't gotten that many calls lately, but a couple of years ago it used to be some of our elderly audience members that would call me and say, I see there's a warning on this. What exactly is in it? And I just sit there and tell them. I said, they say this, they say this, they say this. And that way they make an informed decision whether to come or not, because I'd rather people not come than come and be insulted or embarrassed or whatever. We don't censor the shows we do because one person's
preference is not another person's.
You know, there are some people that can't stand to hear a dirty word or can't stand sexual innuendo and stuff. So, you know, I'd rather them not be insulted and not come to that show and say, we'll see you at the next one. And that's the way it goes.
Well, Beverly, you're the program coordinator, and I've known you with the Dinner Theater now for many years. How long have you been with the Dinner Theater?
I'm in my 17th year now. Yeah.
So what's your role?
I kind of wear a lot of hats, and which I enjoy. I do the administrative portion of the run the office, and I'm prop master, help sell tickets, group sales, I do graphic arts, a little bit of everything. And just like anyone else that's involved in theater, we all help each other out. We need help, you know, building sets or helping with costumes, whatever it may be. We all pitch in. So I'm kind of a jack of all trades.
She won't brag, but Beverly really runs the place.
And, I mean, it's all these, always
this
the
beautiful
one
brochure. She does this, all the graphics and stuff on it. Does the group sales. She's the house manager. Our audience knows Beverly more than they know me or anyone else.
Well, you're the first face that Beverly's most people see.
Beverly's the face of the Dinner Theater because believe it or not, I'm not good with the public. I'm not that kind of a person. And so it's always like, Beverly, will you go talk to those people? Because that's not my thing. That's just not my personality.
It's very nice to run into people. Over the holidays, I ran into a couple people. Someone at Target and someone at the mall. And they stopped me to ask questions about the Dinner Theater. And I recognize their faces because we have a lot of regulars that come to our shows. But it's always nice that, you know, they always have, you know, kind words to say about the Dinner Theater.
And I was at Avila's the other night with my family. And there was a little lady came in. I said, oh, that's that lady that Beverly's always talking to. I didn't know who she was.
Well, yeah. And I think you were saying, Beverly, you're sort of the jack of all trades. And I've noticed it seems to be the case in theater as a rule where you just don't have one person who's just an actor in that role. They're involved in so many other things in that particular production. Even the musicians, you know, I remember after the show wrapped, you had to stick around because you had to strike down that set. Nobody was going to do it for you.
Everyone in our show, I mean, everyone that works at the Dinner Theater, I mean, everyone has their main job. But like, you know, Pat Provencio, who you mentioned earlier, teaches all the vocals to the cast, plays rehearsal piano for all the rehearsals, directs the band and plays in the band. So she's got a major job because we do musicals, obviously. You know, we can't get by without Pat. And we have Beverly, who does all the office stuff and the graphics. We have a new position this year, Don Sieslick filled for a multimedia specialist who does all our sound and video for the productions. And we have Mike Spence, who does our set and lighting design, and Jaime Barba, who does our costume design. Jaime also teaches in the theater department, as do I. And Mike also runs the Don Haskins Center. Pat also teaches in the theater department. And Roy is our technical director. And Armando Guerrero, who's our shop foreman. So we've grown quite a bit. We have, like 9 full-time people now.
Yeah.
But they all have other things to do. I mean, we're not just Dinner Theater because that's the way it was built when it started. Like I said, I started as a student as a work study and have worked my way up. And so everyone has multi-jobs.
Yeah, and in addition to that, we have all these students that provide assistance in both the shop, helping construct sets, or up in the costume shop, helping construct our costumes. And students not only work with the Dinner Theater during their class time, but as part of a theater class, but some of them even come back as volunteers. So it's really nice to see students that have really, you know, stepped in and enjoyed what they've done and continue to, you know, come back.
There's a lot of preparation to these productions because I know you guys hold auditions several months in advance to a particular show.
Well, most of the time auditions are held like 2 months before a show. Mm-hmm. This year, because we had such a big season going and a lot of people wanted to audition for Les Miserables, that we held auditions about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't start rehearsals for another 2 months. The reason we did that is because so many people wanted to audition and they wanted to set their schedules around Les Mis because it has a long performance schedule. So we did it early, and we were right to do that. We had 150 people audition. So it was quite a turnout. But usually we just – like Chess, our summer show, we'll hold auditions sometime in the middle of Les Mis, I mean just a couple of months before.
And all your actors, I mean especially when you have a show that runs that you extend for another couple of weeks. I'm thinking, for example, of Cats, and you have these actors and, you know, sometimes actors get sick or something, maybe a family emergency pops up. Do they have an understudy that might be able to fill their role?
No. In 31 years, knock on wood, we've only canceled one performance for someone being sick.
Wow.
We've had two performances where someone went on with a script in hand to replace a person. But we canceled one night absolutely because there's no one to do it. No, we don't have understudies. There's not enough people. I mean, some shows we have trouble getting a full cast, so having understudies doesn't really work. We've just been fortunate that, you know, most people that do this, especially at our level, community theater level or university level, do it for the love of it. Obviously, we don't pay anybody. I mean, it's not – you do it because you love it. And most of the time, adrenaline or things like that will keep you going. We've had nights with people sick, and we've had to adjust some songs or maybe leave a song out or something because they're sick. But we've only canceled one performance out of, you know, thousands of performances. So we've been very lucky.
Well, Smokey Joe's Cafe is the next musical here on the agenda. It opens on January 31st, and it's one of these musical revues that features the music of Lieber and Stoller. And maybe, like you were saying earlier, maybe some of the younger audience might not be familiar with the names, but they have to be familiar with some of their songs.
Right. When we picked Smokey Joe's, we've done Smokey Joe's before. We did it 10 years ago. And of the reviews that we've done, the shows that feature music of one composer or hits from the 70s, or, you know, we've done several different ones, Smokey Joe's is our most successful. It was a big hit when we did it 10 years ago. And the reason is because, one, we had a talented cast, but two, is the music is so great. I mean, it's just nothing but, you know, a collection of great rock and roll standards. Hound Dog, Jailhouse Rock, Stand By Me, Yakety Yak. I mean, just all these great songs that Lieber and Stoller wrote. And they're put together in such a clever way. There's no story involved, but the characters that sing the songs are relate to each other in a certain way, so they make characters out of these songs and carry a thought through. There's not a storyline, but there's a thought process. So you see the young lovers that travel through the show, start out at one area and end up at another area, even without dialogue, because there's no dialogue. It's just all those songs, great songs. And you have a great live band. That's one of the things we love at the Dinner Theater. When we started 30 years ago, we used recorded music for the first four shows. And the minute we could afford to have live music, we've never turned back because live music is the best. And so it's going to be great music, great songs, a great cast. It's a great show. I mean, it holds the record on Broadway as the longest-running revue.
Wow.
On Broadway. It holds that record. So you can tell it was a big hit in New York. And it's, like I said, of the reviews we've done, it's been the most successful review we've ever done. So we're hopefully going to get another return on that.
So, Beverly, are you getting a lot of calls already about the upcoming Les Mis productions? Ticket sales they haven't started yet for it.
No, they go on sale March 24th. But people have been calling about it. As a matter of fact, this morning alone, I had schools thinking, oh, this would be a perfect field trip. Our students are reading the book. We'd love to bring them over. So everybody's really excited. I know I am. And everybody I've talked to is excited about the show. It's a great show. It's a lot of people call it the musical to end all musicals.
Well, and especially with the movie that came out, yeah, what, a year or two ago,
right.
It's going to be huge.
I think so.
Well,
so.
This is an example of, you know, when people say, when are you going to do X show or not? Is it when I saw Les Miserables, when I went to London the first time in 19, whatever year Les Mis opened, because I was on the plane, I'd never heard of it. And I was reading an article in a magazine that talked about it. It just moved from the Barbican Center where it opened at the Royal Shakespeare Company to the West End in London. And so when I got there, I went to see it. And I mean, from the minute I saw it, it's one of those shows I said, we're going to do this someday. Little did I know it would take 25 years for us to get around, or 30 years to get around to doing it. But like I said, they just released the rights last year. As soon as they released them, we got the rights immediately. It's been done in El Paso on tour. The tour came here several years ago, and several local high schools have done the high school version. A lot of these shows, they released versions where they cut them down in subject matter and they cut them down in length of time for high schools to do it. And I know two or three of the high schools here have done it. But we're the first production of the full Les Mis since the tour was here 15 years ago or whatever. So we're pretty excited about it.
And
so,
that one, you're probably planning on having a few extended dates on that one.
Well, all of our shows, when we pick a show, when we pick any shows, we always put at least 1 week of extended performances aside. Whether we use them or not is a different story. Some shows sell better than others. But Les Mis has several weeks of shows set aside. If we need them, please. We hope we do. Well, Les Mis is a very expensive show. It's a huge set. Large. It's going to have the largest. we can actually call them an orchestra.
That's right.
For that we've had. We're even remodeling the room that the band plays in so we can fit some string players in there. But it's going to have our largest band ever. It's got the cast. The cast is like 35 people.
Oh, my gosh.
And
that's
huge. Tons of costumes. It's a very expensive show. But we picked the season to have Smokey Joe's, which doesn't cost that quite much money, to do before it so we could put all our resources into Les Mis.
And to wrap up the season for this year, Chess, the musical. And that, of course, is – the lyrics are by Tim Rice, who you have a very long-standing relationship with.
Yeah, we always do Tim Rice shows. Tim Rice is a friend of mine and a friend of the Dinner Theaters. And we don't get one every year. We used to. When we first started, there was a Tim Rice show every year. That's why we've done Joseph 5 times, Superstar 5 times, Evita 5 times. We've only done Chess twice. Back in 1989 – we entered our production of Chess into the American College Theater Festival.
I remember that.
Which has about 800 schools around the country that enter. And at the end of the contest, there was a local contest, then a state contest, then there's a national program. And out of those 800 schools, they bring 6 to the Kennedy Center to perform, and our production of Chess was one of them. And that was a big, huge to-do for us because we did the first production of Chess after Broadway anywhere in the country. And we did it a few years later in a reprise, but we haven't done it for now 20 years or whatever. And a lot of people don't know Chess. They know Lion King and they know Joseph and Superstar and Evita. So we felt now was the time to bring Chess back because it's such a great show with great music to our audience. It's going to be new to most of the people.
Well, you can learn more about the UTEP Dinner Theater's remaining season by going to utep.edu/UDT. And you can also call their offices at 747-6060. And Beverly, tickets still available for Smokey Joe's?
Yes, you are. So call and get your tickets soon.
Well, Beverly Kerbs Ward, program coordinator for the UTEP Dinner Theater, Greg Taylor, director of the Dinner Theater, thanks so much for coming on Focus on Campus.
You're welcome. Thanks. Come see Smokey Joe's.
You've been listening to Focus on Campus. I'm Norma Martinez for Louis Sines.